CKUT Radio, 90.3 FM in Montreal.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize there is this thing? Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CQT 90.3 FM. We are 9 days into the month of September. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CQT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, audio from the Alberta Ability webinar that took place on August 21st. All that right here on CQT 90.3 FM. You're listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you would like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news@cqt.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter at @AvalancheCKUT.
Back to school always means new things. A new teacher, new subjects, new friendships, or even new habits like washing your hands after recess, having one dedicated classroom, or wearing a face covering when walking around. This year's back to school is full of new things, and it will be memorable, just like every year. We've put special measures in place so that kids can continue to learn in our schools, and we'll make sure every student is well supported. Visit quebec.ca/back to school for back to school safety. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CQT 90.3 FM. On today's show, audio from the Alberta Ability webinar that took place on August 21st, 2020. This is presented by the Alberta Accessibility Advisory Group and its member organizations.
Good morning, and welcome to the Alberta Ability webinar. My name is Cam Stewart, and my Blackfoot name is Magista Pinakum, which is Blackfoot for Red Morning. I work for the Alberta Human Rights Commission and I'm a member of the Accessibility Legislation Advisory Group, who is hosting this webinar. We would like to acknowledge that as Albertans, we are on Treaty 6, 7, and 8 territories. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis and Inuit, whose footsteps have marked these lands for centuries. Let us also acknowledge all the nations, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, who work, live, and play to create a welcome, inclusive place for all in this territory. This connects with the focus of our conversation for today, for making sure that all barriers are removed and all Albertans have access to services, accommodation, transportations, and et cetera. The issue of accessibility legislation in Alberta was raised last year by the Calgary Ability Network, its human rights table, after the Accessible Canada Act was passed in June of 2019. They subsequently worked with the Alberta Civil Liberties Research Center and drafted some presentations. And several months ago, there was a meeting with the Voice of Alberta Disabilities, the Calgary Ability Network, and the Human Rights Commission, who convened an advisory group to investigate already established legislation across Canada and identify what Alberta can learn from these provinces and the federal government to tackle this issue. Members of this advisory group have worked really hard all this summer, and now it's my pleasure to pass the mic over to our moderators, Heath Burkholz and Amy Park.
Thank you. First, we are quite honored to be moderators for this panel, and to start off as an introduction, and as a human who is very strong, a very strong advocate for mental health, LGBTQ 2S plus, and human and disability rights. Through many public speaking engagements, strengthening with a deep passion about writing and music.
As a human who takes the path of health advocacy and inclusive art, if endeavors, by the way, to clarify, of course, these endeavors are advocating passionately on building communities, collaborating and sharing our wealth of knowledge and lived experience with others.
For the first response, a lot came at 24%, a little came at 65%, and nothing at all came at 11%. For the second question, based on what you know, do you think Alberta should have a provincial accessibility act? 91% said yes, 1% said no, and 8% were unsure. Thank you for participating.
In a moment, we will introduce our three speakers. Each will take up to 5 minutes to explain who they are, what this issue means to them, and touch on their particular areas of expertise.
Once these introductory statements are concluded, three questions will be asked, and each panelist will be given a chance to answer.
I will now go ahead and introduce our first speaker, Sean Crump. As an individual living with a disability, Sean has passionately taken it upon himself to do what he can in support of creating and promoting a more inclusive society for us all to live in and contribute towards. Currently, he voluntarily sits on three not-for-profit boards, as well as sits on three additional committees, including the Access Design Committee with the City of Calgary. He founded and runs a business that actively contributes to ensuring a higher level of accessibility is implemented in the design and construction of spaces, providing recommendations that currently surpass any design standards existing in Canada today. Sean?
Thanks for the intro, Amy. I'd also like to thank the advisory group for all the work they've put into progressing this really important initiative. As mentioned, my name is Sean Crump, and I'm the founder and CEO of Universal Access. Through this unprecedented time, all of us have had our lives flipped upside down. We've seen a huge focus around the challenges and mental health aspects of being socially isolated and how that affects people. Unfortunately, social isolation isn't a new concept for a large majority of people living with disabilities. Whether it's through community participation, employment opportunities, or immersive educational experiences, there is still a huge discrepancy in this province and country. Provincial legislation will help further support the equality of opportunity for all citizens within this province. People over the age of 15 living with a disability make up over 15% of our population in Alberta, And as all baby boomers continue to age, we see that number continuing to increase. Economically, we could see incredible shifts through incorporating accessibility legislation, whether it's increasing employment opportunity, transitioning people living on government subsidies to earning an income and paying into taxes, to businesses becoming more accessible and having the opportunity to accommodate a more diverse population and receive a higher level of revenue through those means. It's legislation that could have a dramatic impact on not only surpassing more equitable living experiences, but also bolster economic initiatives and programs our province is already engaged in or plan to be engaged in the upcoming years. If we compare that to some of the progress we've seen from provinces like Ontario with their AODA legislation, we've seen $9.6 billion in new retail spending from improved accessibility, as well as $1.6 billion in new tourism spending from improved accessibility, being able to accommodate people living with disabilities who look to travel to other countries and regions. Professionally, I work to ensure our communities are more accessible to people and build our ROI for businesses based off the economic advantages being more accessible brings them. I'm sure that not only we discuss the social reasons this needs to occur, but also the economic values it brings. I'm excited to continue discussing this conversation this morning with everyone and hope to bring further insight and value progressing this initiative forward. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you very much, Sean. I would like next to introduce Michael Gottile. Michael Gottile is the Chief of the Commission and Tribunal of the Alberta Human Rights Commission, a role he assumed in August of 2018. Mr. Gottile brings many years of leadership experience in the administrative justice sector, having previously served as the chair of the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario and an executive chair of both the Environmental and Land Tribunals Ontario and the Social Justice Tribunals Ontario. A graduate of Osgoode Hall Law School, he has practiced labor, employment, and human rights law for close to 20 years.
Thank you, Heath, for the kind introduction. And I have to say, I'm just very excited and honored to be part of the conversation today. It's an important conversation, and one I look forward to engaging with everyone in the coming months. In my role as Chief of the Commission and Tribunals, it's always challenging for me to participate in discussions like this, in the sense that certainly as Chief of the Human Rights Commission, I have a role of to be a strong public advocate for human rights. As Chair of the Human Rights Tribunal, of course, I have to be neutral and independent, not to prejudge or comment on what may or may not constitute a violation of the Human Rights Act in any particular case or in any circumstances. And as head of a government agency, a public agency, I must and I absolutely do respect the prerogative and responsibility of the government to determine and plan legislative policy and priorities. Having said that, I do believe, both personally and professionally, as a person with a disability, I'm blind, and in my work as a lawyer and human rights and other areas over the years, I strongly believe that there are many potential benefits in accessibility legislation. Now, of course, the issues are both, in a sense, simple and complex. Simple, Because accessibility is all about equality. And equality is an important principle that that we base our society and our community on. And it's not just one of many important principles. It is preeminent. It's first among all of principles, equality amongst individuals, equality amongst communities. But at the same time, of course, accessibility has many complexities in the sense that we're dealing with disability, which is complex and multi-layered. There are many different kinds of disabilities. Persons with disabilities, their families and others view disability differently, whether it's we sometimes call the medical model or the social model. And how to accommodate persons with disability, of course, will vary. At the same time, there are political, social, and economic aspects to accessibility, which obviously are going to be complex and again, multi-layered. So it's important that we have these discussions to recognize the importance of equality, the preeminence of equality, at the same time, ensure that as we move forward, we can incorporate a variety of interests to make accessibility truly meaningful. I just want to tell a quick story, a personal story that I think underscores one aspect of that complexity and that conundrum, some of the dilemmas and paradoxes involved with disability. A number of years ago, when I was still living and working for the Ontario government, one day I got invited to a meeting on the future of justice in Ontario, and I got a set of PowerPoint slides that wasn't accessible. I couldn't read them. And at that moment, I didn't know what to do. It wasn't the first time I received materials that weren't accessible. But I did feel after 10 years working in the government and people knowing that I was blind, that why would they send me this set of PowerPoints that they knew was or ought to have known wasn't accessible? So at that moment, I asked myself, what should I do? I could easily have flipped it to my assistant and she could have put it into an accessible format. Or I could have sent it back to the people who sent it to me with a note saying, well, these aren't accessible. Could you provide them an accessible format? And I could have been nice about it, or I could have shown my frustration or my anger. All of these things people living with disabilities feel on a daily basis, what to do in those circumstances. In the end, I did send it back. And I got an accessible version back, which was great. But, you know, we often don't know what to do because as people living with disabilities, we know that if we push back, if we call out barriers, we might be seen as troublemakers. We might be seen as unreasonable. We may not get hired. We may get fired. And on a human level, we know that generally where barriers exist, the people don't mean to be, to be mean to us. They don't mean to exclude us. It usually comes from ignorance or a lack of attention to these things. And so, as persons with disability, we're often in a situation of where we have to manage our own feelings and frustrations, but also the other person's feelings and frustrations. We don't want to make other people feel bad. So often times we just keep quiet. And I raise this issue because I think it's part of the discussion of accessibility legislation. For people with disabilities, we find daily we could file a human rights complaint, we could raise issues of barriers and so forth. And that's tiring, it's not fair, and it really could be different. So as we think about whether we need accessibility legislation as part of a suite of measures to develop an Alberta that is inclusive and accessible, we have to ask who ultimately should take on the responsibility of an accessible Alberta. Is it only people with disabilities who have to fight case by case, occurrence by occurrence, or is it all of us who want to embed equality into everything we do and how we organize our communities? Thank you, and I look forward to the discussion this morning.
Thank you, Michael. I would next like to introduce Greg McMeekin, who is a criminal lawyer and proud Calgarian. Greg holds a law degree from the University of Calgary, graduating in 2015, and was called to the Alberta Bar in 2016. Greg is chair of the Premier's Council on the Status of Persons with Disability and FAM co-chair of the Calgary Ability Network Human Rights Table. Greg?
Thanks, Amy, for that wonderful introduction. Hello, everybody. How's everybody doing this morning? I hope everyone is well. Thank you for attending the webinar today, and thank you for including me in this conversation. It's a tremendous honor to be involved in this initiative. I first want to say that the views I share with you today are my own, and they're not representative of the bodies that I currently work with. So why is accessible legislation important to me or important to people with disabilities? Disability legislation is important because, as Michael and Sean have alluded to in their comments, it allows for the breakdown of barriers, for the removal of barriers, and it allows people with disabilities to live full, independent, inclusive, supportive lives. Why is this important? This is important because I believe all people can have a positive impact on community and society and make our community better. We have seen over the last few months during the pandemic, people have faced great challenges, both able-bodied and people with disabilities. And unfortunately, because of circumstances related to the pandemic, often the challenges that people with disabilities face are more prevalent and they face more. So we have made great strides as a society in my lifetime. I believe we have so much more to do, and I believe that people with disabilities can positively impact community, but it's up to all community to help each other through difficult and challenging times. I was integrated into the regular school system, and as Amy said, I graduated in 2015 with my law degree from the University of Calgary and was called to the bar in Alberta in 2016. And 2 years ago, I had just finished articling and I was looking for a way to contribute. And I faced some challenges with articling due to my disability, and I was feeling like I could have accomplished more had my own particular barriers been better addressed. So I found out about the Calgary Ability Network through Maison and the Alberta Cerebral Palsy Association, and she, we had a conversation one day, and she asked me to become the co-chair of the Alberta Human Rights Table. And she said, what would you like to see improved? And through lived experience and through work experience, it was clear to me that although we have come a long way, we still have a long way to go. And the best way to remove these barriers, I think, is through disability legislation. We cannot comment about what potential legislation may look like, and we can't comment on timelines. I'm hopeful that we can accomplish this together as soon as possible. However, it is up to the government to pass legislation. We can only provide support in that area, but it's up to all of us to say how important this is and to say what your challenges are and to talk about how you want to see these barriers removed. So I don't want to take up too much more time. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this discussion, and I look forward to talking with everybody further about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you to all the panelists for introducing yourselves, and look forward to seeing how this webinar goes. So for our first question, which we will give 9 minutes for the panel to answer, what current protections do Albertans with disabilities have, and is this enough?
Sure. It's an interesting question because it's framed as what protections do people with disabilities have. And in fact, the range of legislation and policies and regulations and so forth aren't necessarily all protections. So for example, the Human Rights Act is certainly protections. It protects individuals against discrimination because of physical or mental disability. People can't be fired because of a disability. They can't be refused service. We also have legislation such as relating to service dogs. People with service dogs can't be refused service because they have a guide dog or a service dog. But there are other pieces of legislation, of course, that fundamentally affect and are critical to the lives of people with disabilities. So you have AISH, the Assured Income for Severely Handicapped Individuals, which provide benefits. You also have other benefit programs that provide income support and other rehabilitation support. These aren't protections, but they're still legislation that are important to the lives of individuals with disabilities and allow them to have meaningful, dignified lives. Of course, there are questions about the sufficiency of some of those supports. And then, of course, you have other kinds of legislation and policies, such as that set standards or expectations of service providers. For example, under education legislation and policy, individuals or children with disabilities have the right to be included in public education, to receive public education, to be provided the supports within the public education system, and being entitled to receive a quality, meaningful public education. So it's important not to just look at protections, but in fact, the range of legislative and policy things that impact people with disabilities. And I say that because, of course, accessibility legislation is not protection per se. It's more setting standards that apply right across the sector, whether it's industry, employment, the service providers. You know, it's more like building codes and requirements to have fire alarms or sprinklers. These affect everyone's lives. And again, as I said before, it's not up to an individual who may be the victim of poor planning or poor design to complain every time and then change has been made. This is a matter of setting up standards ahead of time to make the community safe and inclusive.
I agree with Michael completely. I think when considering protections based off of the legislations that currently exist, it then kind of defaults to the individual that feels like their rights are in fact being infringed upon to then move forward in a manner to, you know, rectify or resolve that issue on a case by case or complaint by complaint basis, as opposed to having legislation set up that can help further create a more equitable environment for people to, you know, participate and have opportunities within the community or within the province and our society within it to have that level playing field amongst everyone else, so that people feel like they are, you know, not disadvantaged on the onset. They're not trying to start a race 5 meters back from everybody else. It's to ensure that, you know, there is a level of expectation on the onset, as opposed to having it more as a reactionary based outcome.
Good. We will go on to the first Q&A question from the participants. The Q&A question is, how are you addressing the unique barriers that Indigenous peoples living with disabilities face? And are you launching a consultation process to engage and gather a perspective on these accessible needs of First Nations communities?
So I think, if you guys don't mind, I can jump on that one. I think that that's kind of putting the cart before the horse in this, where right now it's kind of a hypothetical conversation on the legislation itself and the importance of enacting something like this on a provincial basis, knowing that we've got a federal legislation that's received royal assent last year, and, you know, how that's going to impact provinces and people living in Canada, and looking at other provinces that have it enacted. So really kind of looking at what's next would be the question that I think that would fall under. And that's what comes after this conversation, what comes after, you know, bringing to light the advantages and the necessity behind having legislation like this in our province. And I do believe that would be having, you know, different communities and different individuals representing a multitude of different groups come to the table and share, you know, distinct needs and requirements that need to be facilitated through these legislations. You know, disability is one of the largest minority demographics in the world, and it's one that anybody can become a part of at any point in their life. And that's not subject to race or gender or sexual preference or orientation. It's, you know, it's one that affects everybody. And that's something that needs to be taken into consideration when moving forward with things like this and topics of this magnitude.
If I could just pick up on what Sean was saying, although we can't specifically discuss what might be addressed in potential legislation. I can tell you that the government of Alberta and the federal government is taking issues concerning Aboriginal people seriously. They are dealing with some issues right now, and it's an ongoing process. However, like as I said, it's too early to say to talk about what potentially may be involved in legislation.
Yeah, it's Michael here. I think it's an excellent question, and an important one to ask, because for you know, a number of reasons, but partly because accessibility legislation, first of all, has to you know, stem from and you know, include and stem from the voices of people with disabilities. And we do have to recognize that even within the, you know, within the disability community, there are, you know, sometimes we talk about intersectionality, or and so the experience of, you know, myself as growing up in the middle class, a white family, very different experience than, you know, somebody, a person with disability growing up in a community that had far less services, or whether it's, you know, I grew up in a city, people growing up in rural areas. So there are certainly those multiple layers of marginalization or disadvantage, multiple barriers that stem from different, you know, different, as I say, disadvantage, absolutely have to be thought about. And you know, similarly or related to that is, the whole point of accessibility legislation is to build communities with accessibility in mind, so by design, rather than build something and then have to go back and retrofit it because it wasn't accessible. And so it's easy to see that and think about that when we're talking about, for example, you know, buildings. But if we're talking about transportation, what does it mean for individual, you know, I'm thinking about Indigenous communities or people who live in rural communities in Alberta when there is no transportation network, or, you know, Greyhound closes down and that sort of thing. How are people who are blind or can't drive, what's the impact on their ability to participate? So I think the question is a good one, has to be asked and certainly has to be considered in this discussion.
Thank you to the panelists for responding to that question. I will now ask the second question, which again, we will give the panelists 9 minutes to respond to. The second question is this: what does the Accessible Canada Act mean for Alberta?
The Accessible Canada Act was established in June of 2019, and the purpose of it is to remove all barriers for people with disabilities and make our country a more accessible place to live. Basically, they looked at two main focuses of the legislation are accessibility of buildings and employment. And it's important to note that the Accessibility Act deals with all federal regulations and federal buildings, whereas in a potential Alberta legislation, we would be dealing with things that would be involved with Alberta jurisdiction only. I'm thinking about banks and, for instance, airports are under federal legislation, I believe, but accessibility on specific aircraft and the ability of a person with a disability to travel would be under Alberta legislation. So for those wondering why an Alberta legislation is important, there are things, there are issues that need to be addressed for people with disabilities under provincial legislation that are not covered currently under the Federal Accessibility Act.
Yeah, I think Greg is right. And when we think of sort of our normal daily lives, I would say the vast majority of our interactions in the employment field, in service and goods facilities, housing, accommodation, health services, these are all matters that fall under provincial jurisdiction. And so the Accessible Canada Act doesn't apply to those kinds of activities and interactions. As Greg says, airlines, telecommunications, broadcasting, banking are federal, but I think the if we are truly to have an accessible Alberta, we need the companion Alberta legislation. Sean?
Yeah, I agree. I think that provincially it focuses more in on Albertans. I think it takes into consideration and allows things to progress at a little bit of a higher rate. With the federal legislation, I think that there's a lot more process to go through in order to see kind of a trickle-down effect to private business, to municipalities, to, again, even provincial pieces that are controlled within, you know, Alberta's province itself. So, yeah, I think it was well stated, and I agree with both Greg and Michael.
The first question is, in reviewing the documents, it is pointed out that the enforcement were both in pitfalls in Ontario and Manitoba. What do you envision legislative enforcement looks like in Alberta?
Yeah, I can start with that one. So again, I think that these are details that would have to be taken into consideration. I think comparative analysis would be part of incorporating an accessibility legislation here in Alberta. I think enforcement kind of comes in many different facets. So in the built environment, you know, if you're providing grandfathering to buildings that already exist and, you know, there's a certain standard in which they need to meet by a certain deadline to ensure that there's strategies and plans that are provided to show how they plan to meet these certain new building standards by a certain time, you know, granting occupancy to new buildings that meet new standard and regulation, HR policies, and those types of things, making sure that all of that falls within, the enforcement area. And again, trying to move away from individuals having to come out with a complaint or an issue that they have to, you know, go through a tribunal process, but really trying to come out at it from a point of view where things can be prevented as opposed to dealt with on an ongoing basis. Like case-to-case basis, sorry.
So I think the enforcement question is you know, like everything else, multi-layered. As Sean said, part of accessibility legislation will always involve, well, not always, but often involves the question of, are there exemptions? Are there exemptions to pre-existing buildings? Are there exemptions to organizations or employers below a certain size? And obviously people with disabilities want full accessibility. Why should a small store not be accessible, but a large store be accessible? You know, those kinds of things. I think the thrust of accessibility legislation is to create a society and environment where all services are accessible, and buildings and services where employers are committed to accessibility and accommodation. And, you know, in Nova Scotia, for example, one of the very popular and I think useful parts of that legislation was to create a fund for employers and others to help compensate and help contribute to refitting and implementing accessibility standards. So I think there are different ways. The other thing about enforcement, I think it's important because if you have legislation, obviously you want to make sure people are complying. But I think the other thing about accessibility legislation is an understanding that, you know, to achieve full accessibility, it's a process that's not just about passing a law and putting people in jail, if it's not really put people in jail, but finding people if they don't comply, but to really change the attitudes of people. As Sean said, understanding the benefits, economic benefits, to get people on board of the benefits of accessibility. And that takes time. And that's why in legislation, they don't talk about passing the legislation and then in 2 years, all the barriers will be gone. You know, we're in Ontario, which was passed in 2005, and the target was 2025. Federally, it's 2040. So there's an understanding that attitudes will need to change, and people start to see the benefits within their own communities and within their families and so forth.
If I could just add on to what Mike and Sean have said, it's important to keep in mind that education and awareness are a major contributor to ensuring compliance. Many provinces have tended towards more of a focus on education and awareness, and I think it is an important piece to keep in mind, especially with Alberta's current economic outlook. Many businesses and people would like to make things accessible or more barrier-free and inclusive, but due to economic reality, that may not be possible. And so I think what Michael was mentioning about Nova Scotia and what they've done about having this grant available for businesses to help with compliance would be something worth looking more at.
Thank you very much. And we've got enough time for, I think, one more question before we get on to the next panel question. Sean, you mentioned about the group of disabilities in the highest minority group. and that women and men are similar. Can you explain more, please? And all research in the world states that the double disadvantage of women with disabilities.
Yeah, I definitely can explain. I didn't mean to insinuate that there was any discrepancy or that there are a similarity amongst those living with disabilities. I was stating that individuals of any identifier can belong to the disability demographic. So again, I injured myself as a young adult and now live as a quadriplegic. And so therefore I now belong to this community or have become a participant or advocate or person living with a disability. So I wasn't trying to insinuate that men and women are equally comparable of those who live with disabilities, but really just that you can be a woman and live with a disability. You can be a man and live with a disability. You can be, you know, of different ethnicity and those types of things. So it's just a statement on the general size of the demographic, not those within it are impacted equally or any of that kind of piece. So sorry for miscommunicating that.
Okay, and we still have a little bit of time. So for the next question, if you have an idea to improve an existing system, or maybe even share a new idea to support people with disabilities, what is the life cycle and where do you start?
That's a good question. I don't know if I'm probably the best one to answer that actually, because I don't know if that kind of my area would be able to identify that process. Michael, that may fall under your purview a little better.
Yeah, so I'm not sure I understand the question exactly, but if we're talking about sort of ideas, almost innovative ideas to improve the lives of people with disability, I mean, that I was going to mention something after the previous question about enforcement, because I, you know, a couple of things come to mind. You know, so for example, I know, you know, after the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disability legislation came in, and you know, there were requirements for stores and businesses to ensure accessible entries for individuals using wheelchairs and other mobility devices. You know, I think a lot of small businesses felt, you know, pressured and again felt they couldn't afford it. You know, maybe they had a business with, you know, one step. That's just the way things were built, you know, into the store and those sorts of things. They were committed, they wanted to do it, but, you know, maybe they didn't own the building, they just rented it, you know. And somebody came up with this little ramp, this little portable ramp, and started marketing. And I think it's like less than $100. And you see them all over the city now. And, you know, so those are ideas of, you know, it's just these little ideas. It doesn't solve the whole problem. No one's saying all of a sudden we have an accessible society, that people with disabilities aren't any longer, you know, discriminated in employment. But there's a little thing that makes a huge difference. Another example I can use, because Greg was talking about, you know, the cost. Again, not to downplay the importance of, you know, important changes in employment practices and offering individuals with disabilities accommodation in employment. But, I mean, I know that as a person who's blind, how different it is when I walk into a restaurant, for example, and somebody says to me, "Can I offer you an arm? Can I offer you an elbow?" As opposed to saying, oh, yeah, there's a table over there, right? Saying there's a table over there doesn't help me. I don't know where there is. I don't know where they're talking. I don't know how to get there. But when they say, can I offer you an elbow? Not only is it the way you're supposed to assist somebody who's blind, it immediately tells me I'm welcome. It immediately tells me that business has taken the time and it doesn't cost anything. You know, there's videos and YouTubes. That business has taken the time to ask its employees, just take a look at how you appropriately greet somebody who's blind or has a disability. You know, a business that just spaces tables or those sorts of things. So I think that, yes, there are little innovations that people can think about, or, you know, students in school can, you know, develop, you know, different kinds of materials that are more accessible, or you know, stuff on using technology. I think there are ways to help in the entire effort to create an accessible community.
Okay, thank you. We're just going to move into the third question for the planned questions for the panelists. This question is, in your opinion, should Alberta pass provincial accessibility legislation?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that there's a lot of advantages that it comes with. But I also think that this isn't something that, you know, the province should just jump into without doing its proper due diligence into it. As we've seen, you know, there's a lot of different groups, Indigenous and so forth, that need to be consulted, that have different viewpoints and different needs that need to be met, even though still falling under that disability classification. So I think there's a lot of work that
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CQT 90.3 FM. You are just listening to the Alberta Ability webinar, a panel discussing accessibility legislation in Alberta. And that completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special presentation of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, check out our Twitter, at AvalancheCKUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CQT possible. If you'd like more info on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact The Avalanche at avalancheckut.ca or CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at CKUT.ca. Stay tuned for HRSA, that's up next. We'll be right back.
can happen to you if you're young at heart. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind if you're young at heart. You can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh till your dreams fall apart at the seams. And life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth when you're young at heart? For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind when you're young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you derive out of being